Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. No Thomas Drantz today. He is traveling. He's going to be covering the Canucks on the road for the remainder of this road trip. So he'll be back on the show remotely next week. And again, Landon Ferraro is going to join me in studio here coming up at 1 o'clock. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com is going to join us in just a second here. Obviously, lots to get into with Kevin Woodley, certainly on the goaltending front, but also just generally his impressions of this team's performance through four games, what he thought of that game last night as well. Don't forget, you can get your questions in to the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Anything you want to run past me, or more likely, the actual former professional hockey player, Landon Ferraro. If you got questions for him, send them in, 650-650 as well, to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in already to the Dunbar Lumber text line about Quinn Hughes' continued success and what else the Canucks are looking for early in the season. And joining me now to talk about all of that and more, as mentioned, from NHL.com and InGoal Magazine, he is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. He is Kevin Woodley. Woodley, thank you as always for doing this. How are you?
I'm good. I'm like 2 minutes into an 8 minute pigeon pose hold because I play hockey as soon as we get off here. So if you hear any like minor discomfort in my voice, this will be a first for me trying to do an interview. I got the stat, like, Jamie, I'm prepared. I got multiple stats up in front of me while I hold this. I'm ready to go.
I am so impressed. This is like, this is next level.
Combining. Yeah.
This is next level radio guesting. Yeah, this is incredible. I love it. All right. So there's a lot to get to in terms of goaltending. Before we get there, just kind of what was your big takeaway from, you know, the Canucks getting their first win of the season last night in Florida?
Well, I mean, obviously the Panthers were missing some key guys, but for the most part, they played that game pretty even, right? And, you know, there were still some, you know, I think six high danger against, but basically the sort of level of defensive play looked a little better. Still some mistakes in front of the net, and it was interesting. I was on with the afternoon guys earlier in the week and looking at a new sort of team report card style system that ClearSight has developed called PlayStyle. And it was interesting to me that on the defensive side, you know, things that I don't think any of us would have expected going into the season, like net front defense is 32nd in the NHL. From the dots down in the defensive zone, they're 29th. And lateral plays in the defensive zone, east-west, they're 32nd. They're not giving up anything off the rush. They're not creating off the rush. But their inability thus far this season to sort of take care of the front of their net, Jamie, has been one of the bigger, you know, surprises to me, given that the personnel changes are pretty much only on one pairing. And I think that was better last night, not enough to budge them out of those spots. But I thought the overall effort in front of their own net, despite the first goal being sort of a product of that, and despite Lankinen and still having to make some bang-bang plays in tight, that's an area that needs to get better. I thought it at least took a step, even if it was a baby step last night. I thought they played the Panthers pretty even, and the game sort of showed that. The numbers showed that in terms of expected goals. Both teams, you know, the Canucks were close to three, the Panthers were 2.25, and the Canucks essentially get the win off, you know, off JT Miller making a skill play in overtime.
You know, that point about the net front defense is really fascinating. I mean, you can think, you know, everyone who's watching the games can think about a couple of times where they just get out of position down low and the other forward is there to jam, or the other team's forward is there to jam the puck in. And it's so fascinating because you look at how the blue line is constructed, right, with the size on the back end, and you think that should be the number one thing they're set up to defend well. In a way, it almost makes me more optimistic about the team's defensive performance because it seems so hard to imagine that will continue for a long stretch of time. But what do you have a theory as to why it has been so poor in the early going here?
Well, I think it kind of reinforces the notion that it's not all about the defenseman, right? That you can have that size, you can have that reach, But if not everybody is on the same page, if the forwards aren't coming back to the right spot, if the defensemen, as we've seen several times early this season, chase into corners and get caught out of position, then it doesn't matter what your reach is or what your size is. There are gaps in your defending and your coverage that other teams will exploit. I think the one thing to me that was really surprising, and I thought we saw it in the Flyers game maybe the most, and that's where Lankinen had to be at his best, was the amount of times that teams are just sort of getting behind the defense with enough room to cut across the top of the crease. That Flyers game alone, and I think of the Bobby Brink chance, there must have been three or four where Lankinen has to go side to side. He talks about defending one half of the net. Well, that hasn't been the case down low in a lot of these games. And that's where, you know, the size and style that you've tried to create personnel-wise and identity-wise last year and personnel-wise continuing into this year, that's a bit of a surprise to me. How much do you miss Ian Cole? Well, Derek Forbert was supposed to be a similar type player. Not saying it's Derek Forbert's fault, but just that identity as a whole hasn't quite been there for this group defensively. And again, not just on the defensemen, it's on the forwards too. I think it goes to show you that it has to be more than personnel, more than, you know, sort of a size chart. It has to be an attitude and an identity. And maybe it's hard, like, in fairness, Jamie, maybe that's really hard to do in October.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, where it pays off the most is down the stretch when things tighten up. We certainly saw it in the playoffs, helped them keep games tight. But at this point in the season, it certainly hasn't been effective in terms of what they're giving up compared to what that identity was supposed to be.
Well, and I do wonder, you know, the point you make about how hard it can be to maintain that identity game after game, especially early in the season. And, you know, last year it was such a point of emphasis, right? We are going to defend the guts of the ice. We are going to be stingy defensively. This year, we all know the emphasis shifted in training camp and the preseason to, okay, how do we get more dangerous off the rush? How do we take more chances and generate more grade A scoring chances for ourselves? And I don't think it's as simple as, oh, well, they're trying to get up ice in a hurry, and that's why they're giving up more chances, right? Like, I don't think that makes you chase into the corner necessarily as a D-man. But I do wonder if just the fact that it wasn't the number one emphasis in, you know, it hasn't been in practice, it hasn't been the number one emphasis in training camp, like, you know, practice works for a reason, right? The things you work on in practice are supposed to translate to the game. And I wonder if that's caused just a little bit of slippage in that identity early.
Well, you can combine that with the fact that there is a fair, you know, I mean, it's only one pairing. It's only the third pair on defense, but, you know, pretty much a new forward on every line combination up front, and the need for everybody to be on the same page in terms of what their assignments are down low, what lanes they're supposed to be in to prevent pucks from getting to the front of the net. And also the fact that, you know, maybe to a certain degree, and I don't want to say this, it's not an absolute, but maybe to some degree, the lessons of last year, as much as they were learned and executed on throughout the season, you know, maybe they're not rooted into the DNA just yet.
Yeah.
Even for the guys that are returning, right? And maybe they do need to be driven home a little bit more. And Rick Tocchet talked about this, right? Like, he took onus on himself for the focus being what it was. Now, I will say, for all the focus on getting up ice and creating off the rush, they're dead last in odd man rush offense. But thankfully, because we worried about it, that push coming at the expense of odd man rush defense, as much as they're dead last at creating odd man rushes, they're first in the NHL at not giving them up so far. So, we haven't seen that transpire the way maybe I think we expected coming out of training camp based on all the sort of, you know, applause that was given to the focus in training camp. And frankly, given the focus itself and the talk and the emphasis on it, right down to personnel and the emphasis on speed in the offseason. But again, it's early. You don't snap your fingers. And again, I think this sort of points to it. Having the right people in place to create that style, whether or that identity, whether it's creating rush chances with speed or defending the front of your net with size, isn't enough. It really does have to be something that you work on a regular basis and carve into your identity and have other support pieces. Just as the defending in front of their net is not only on the defenseman, the inability to create off the rush is not only on the forwards, right? Because the defensemen have to be able to get them pucks in a place to succeed when they're moving up ice. So everything just hasn't quite come together yet. and yet they've got points in three or four. They played pretty much all of these games pretty tight, and we can see not just the clear room for improvement, but how those improvements should come somewhat naturally given the personnel that they've added.
Yeah, and on that, you know, the offensive side of things, and especially the quest to be more dangerous off the rush, as you said, still 32nd in odd man chances early in the season here. I did feel watching the game yesterday, there, like, it didn't amount to really anything in terms of scoring chances, but there were moments at least when they were able to break out the puck where you could really see the weak side defenseman hustling up the ice to try to join the play, to try to create those looks, put a little stress on the defense. Again, I'm not saying it was a brilliant performance in that regard. It didn't necessarily generate scoring chances, but it felt like the first game this season where I could at least kind of see the shape of what they're trying to do, right? The way they're trying to be more aggressive through the neutral zone than they were last season. Did anything like what have you seen just in terms of these efforts and what they want it to look like so far through four games here?
Well, I think I'm with you. Like, you're seeing attempts. You're just not seeing necessarily execution or a clicking at all times. And don't forget the one thing about clear sight, as a measuring tool, is they don't count attempts. They only count things on net. So
right.
when they get up ice, when your eye test is telling you that's happening, but they're just not managing to create scoring chances on net out of it, that's not going to show up in the metrics. The chances they're giving up in front of their own net do. The chances they're trying to create but not executing on the other end don't. So I'm with you in terms of seeing the attempts, the efforts. And again, a work in progress, right? You don't snap your fingers and have all of these things come together, especially, and I think this is very much true, teams are not taking them for granted like they
right.
did maybe to a higher degree at the start of last season, right? And they warned us. Players were warned. Management talked about it as far back as, you know, the exit meetings just a few days after the season ended. It was going to get harder this year. You know, teams won't be coming into Vancouver and based on all the previous years, sort of looking at them thinking it's an easy 2 points and maybe not ready to put their work boots on. They have the attention of their opponents more so early this season. So it's just going to take a little while till we see it, you know, click to the degree that they would like it to. And in the meantime, I don't know that the process has been all that bad despite just the first win last night. Like, it's not like they're getting blown out.
Yeah,
you can see the bones of a good team even when it's not completely going their way early on.
Yeah, and that point about not being taken for granted, I mean, even last night, shorthanded Panthers team, but that was a very spirited game, right? Like, that wasn't a Panthers team that was sleepwalking through it, that was looking past the Canucks. They came to play, and it was a hard-fought game both ways. All right, let's talk about the two guys in the crease right now for the Canucks, Kevin Lankinen and Artur Shelyavs. Lankinen, as you said, made some really impressive saves. I thought he was really good last night. He was solid against Philly as well. What are you seeing from Kevin Lankinen through his first couple of starts for the Canucks?
I'm seeing kind of what I expected. I hate to say it because it's early and this could blow up in my face at any point. It's a tiny sample. But, like, everything about this makes me want to scream at teams around the league and say, like, why aren't you all looking at the same numbers I'm looking at? Like, how am I able to look at these numbers and find Charlie Lindgren as a guy who could give you number one minutes at $1.3 million 2 years ago? Find Connor Ingram as a guy who could play number one minutes or at least 1A minutes for a team off waivers a year ago? And scream since July that Kevin Lankinen should have been one of the top three goalies off the board for a 1B role, if not more, and was ready to pop into upside. And he's still sitting around in September for the Canucks to grab as a safety blanket. They got a good one here, Jamie. All the numbers indicated that he was ready to pop. And for whatever reason, he didn't get a contract, probably because he'd been making $2 million. And after the top two guys, Stolarz and Brassois, because their numbers really jumped off the charts. After them, the market fell out for what teams were willing to play. At the end of the day, he's a guy I would have put in the same category as those two statistically based on the underlying stuff I have. Because nobody else did, he was available. This is him earning the job. If that's what happens ahead of Artur Shelyavs, is in no way an indictment of Artur Shelyavs. It is Kevin Lankinen, who was 12th in the NHL in adjusted save percentage last year, is 13th right now, again, despite some really early samples and some guys
yep.
some crazy crooked numbers. He looks as I expected and as advertised, and the numbers sort of bear it out. He's a really good goalie. Whether he's a number one, like Thatcher Demko level long term, that's not what I'm saying. But he was a value play that teams could have found if they were looking at the right numbers. And it blows my mind that the majority of the league continues to not look at these numbers. Because it's not like I'm, you know, some type of Nostradamus expert. I'm just going by these numbers. But they hit, yeah. Right? Like they hit more times than they don't. The number of mistakes, I won't name names, but like the number of like big contract mistakes that have been handed out that one look at adjusted save percentage and an underlying profile on ClearSight would have prevented from happening, guaranteed, it's absurd. So, yeah, consider this an advertisement for ClearSight, I guess, because I keep seeing mistakes being made that these numbers would have prevented teams from making, and that includes not signing guys or doubling down on guys as backups. Like I said, Kevin Lankin is better than half the backups in the league. And a lot of teams that have those backups that aren't as good as him double down to get them. So I get saving money on the salary cap, and maybe nobody wanted to pay two instead of one. But he was on a short list of guys I would have made that investment in, and the Canucks are reaping the reward right now.
Well, and even if you don't think he has true number one upside, you know, as you describe him, it sounds like he could be kind of a perfect complement to Thatcher Demko when he returns, right? If you're concerned about Thatcher Demko's workload and you want to dial it back a little bit in the regular season, like Lankinen sounds like kind of the perfect guy for that, right? One, because of his contract, but also because of his ability to be, you know, not the type of backup he was in Nashville where Saros is playing so much of the season, but the type of backup who can take on a much bigger percentage of the workload in the regular season.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, on a per shot basis, he outperformed UC last year. I think maybe some of the trepidation outside of not having access to the numbers that would sort of point to this. But the other teams sort of looked at that and probably asked, why didn't he play more? And your yeah. answer was UC Saros.
Yeah.
But even in a down year last year, he didn't get more opportunity in the net. And like I said, I've been kind of, you know, shouting this on the rooftops dating back to two trade deadlines ago. He was my plan B next best option after Jonas Korpisalo before the Predators re-signed him for last season. Again, because the underlying numbers, like Korpisalo when he went to LA, looked like they were ready to pop, at least in that season. And, you know, the difference for Lankinen is now with a new team, he's continuing in a small sample to produce the same types of numbers, even better so far. Even despite being on a new team.
So far through four games, right, it's been Shelov's Lankinen, Shelov's Lankinen. We'll see what they choose to do in Philly. Has the gap between the two and their performance been large enough to go away from that 50-50 alternating system so far?
The gap in their numbers is certainly enough to justify it, but it's not just about numbers. You have to keep in mind keeping both guys active and sort of engaged
yeah.
in this and how you feel about where their games are at. I didn't mind Archer's the other night, for sure. Trying to think, the only one I didn't love was the second goal. Tocchet yep. referenced it after. He's late going into his post, which means he's late coming out of his post. I think he just kind of defaulted to a post integration as the sort of player spun up off the bottom of the circle rather than sort of thinking it through a little more. He stays on his feet there and he's set and square and it's an easy save. The fact he gets caught moving the wrong way as that play goes back up the zone for a one-tee costs him there. And so, but that's a learning experience, right? And so that's the question I can't answer. Performance-wise, yes, it's Kevin Lankinen's net. But it's such a tiny sample and you need to keep Arturs engaged. And if you feel that he's learning from those little moments, and there's a payoff for that, because don't forget, Lankinen's on a one-year deal,
yep.
then, you know, finding enough minutes for him has to remain part of this equation, whether that's an everyday back and forth or every game back and forth or one out of every three. We'll ultimately see where they settle in performance, and whether those performances continue to grow in opposite directions will dictate that. But you do need to keep in mind the second part of that equation, and that's making sure that Arturs doesn't just sit there for long periods of time.
So we saw the big kind of goalie news around the NHL. One of the big stories around the NHL this week, Jake Oettinger signing the new contract in Dallas. And, of course, this matches what Swayman signed in Boston. You know, you can compare it as well to the Ilya Sorokin deal with the Islanders. What's your reaction to kind of seeing this new standard set for number one goalies across the NHL?
I think it reminds me of when the 5x5 contract became the new standard, and for goalies at least. And I think you're like, good on you, because I think a lot of us, including myself for a little while, that was kind of pointing to Swayman as the one to set this mark. But the reality is that it was Ilya Sorokin. And I would point back to the 5x5, because I think Demko was one of that group, and I just can't remember, Jamie, I apologize, whether he was one of the first. I know he was one of the first.
I think he kind of was. I think he set. I think that was kind of the market-setting deal, to be honest. And even you remember, there were some eyebrows raised when they signed it, but then there was a flood of those deals that came after it.
Right, and some even a little higher, like Elvis Merzlikins was, I think, 5.6. But yeah, so what happens when you set this is everybody sort of rushes to get their guy to the same deal. And I think there is a bit of a rush right now, because it could get reset further by Igor Shesterkin, who obviously wants more than this. And if it does, you want to have your guy locked up at the standard right now at 8.25 rather than 11 or 12. But if you also recall the 5x5 deal, not everybody that got one ended up ultimately deserving it. I think, and I hate to do this because I liked where his game was trending and thought he was a safe bet, and I was wrong on this one. Cal Peterson, right? Like, that was one of the 5x5 deals that followed Thatcher Demko. And I think, you know, the Kings are still eating money on that, and he's in the minor leagues. I mean, Philly can't get a save out of their 6'7" Russian, and Cal Peterson's still in the minor leagues and can't get a look. Like, the bottom's just falling out there. And I wish I understood why, but this is the cautionary tale. Just because the standard's set, you really need to make sure the guys you're adding to that standard meet the performance portion of it. Do I feel good about Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman and that group? Absolutely. Do I feel good about Jake Oettinger in terms of the profile he has as an elite young goalie with the size and the skill, and he had that one run in the playoffs? I do. The adjusted numbers on Jake in the last two seasons haven't been nearly as flattering and nowhere near the level of Swayman and Ullmark. And that's because a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of save percentage, because the raw save percentage hasn't been bad, but a lot of heavy lifting there has been the defensive environment of the Dallas Stars. And so this is where teams are going to have to be careful. I'm not saying Jake Oettinger isn't a guy I would have bet on, because there are so many things I like about his game and his mindset that I think he'll correct back to where he was 2.5 seasons ago, 3 seasons ago, earlier in his career. But that's the risk, because if you're going to go 8 years, 8.25, and he has another season like he did last year, and by the way, I don't think he will. He's already off to a hell of a start. Mm-hmm. But, you know, last season was essentially, he broke even. He was a league average goaltender. Came on in the end, figured some things out, and the conversations I had with him about how he figured them out make me optimistic that he'll, this year's early results will be the trend. And so it makes it a better bet. But man, if you bank on pedigree too early and the results don't match it, 8x8.25, if the guy ultimately ends up being league average, is the kind of albatross you don't want hanging around your neck long term. So much like the Demko deal being a standard at the beginning, there are some teams that regret following it. I'm curious to see if everyone is happy with jumping onto this new standard over the next, and who else does over the next several months.
Woodley, you're a legend. Top-notch analysis while getting ready to play your own hockey game. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Good luck in the game.
I even switched sides halfway through. I don't know if you could hear the creaking.
No.
Of the hips as I switch. But yeah, we made it through, Jamie. Hey, one last plug, folks. Kevin is in goal on Twitter. Make sure you go check out the pin. We're trying to raise some money for the Canucks Autism Network. We've got a great raffle with tickets to the game, signed jerseys from Hughes, Pettersson, and Demko. Limited tickets available, limited time only, another 12 days to buy. Go check it out on my socials, on the Sportsnet 650 socials. Support a great cause and win some great prizes.
Great shout. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jimmy.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George and White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. Canucks.com. All right, Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst, in studio for the final hour of the week here on Canucks Talk. That's coming up next. Send your questions in if you've got them for Landon. We'll try to cover them in the final hour of the show. Again, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Friday edition of the show here on Sportsnet 650. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Of course, Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And as I said off the top of the show, no Drance today. He's traveling. He's going to go cover the team for the remainder of this road trip. But I've got a massive, massive upgrade in my co-host for the final hour of the show. Canucks analyst, former NHL player, joining me in studio, Landon Ferraro. What's going on, man? Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I'm just hoping you say that at the end of the hour. So we'll see how it goes.
Trust me, I will. I will be saying that at the end of the hour. Don't you worry. But it's going to be great here. And look, we got to win. Now, hold on. Before we get into that, though, I do have to ask, are you tired of having a Hall of Fame dad yet? Is it like, I know it's great when it happens, a nice honor for the family, but is it wearing a little thin yet?
I would put it this way. I'm happier he's in now that I don't have to hear about that he's not in anymore. And I was very quick to tell him that this was definitely the last Hall of Fame that's calling. So, you know, you probably don't need to wait much longer here.
That's fantastic. It's over. It's done.
It's done. All right. No more. We're moving on.
Well, congratulations to your dad. Congratulations to you for that as well. So, as I said, very happy for a Friday edition of the show with you in studio that the Canucks gave us. Finally, and I say finally, I know it was only four games, but a win to talk about. And, you know, we can get into what improved, right? Who played well, all of those things, how they won the game, what still needs to improve. But I just think as much as we all know it's still early, right? We all know, hey, they picked up points in the first couple of ones anyway, so it's not like they were 0-for. When that goal goes in for JT Miller and they get the 2 points, it's just got to feel huge for them. Like, to get your first win of the season, so it's not lingering in the back of your mind, it's not a monkey on your back, just, okay, we can stop thinking about it. Yeah, it's early, we weren't panicking, but, like, man, that must be a good feeling for those guys.
For sure. I feel like it almost puts, like, a bow on the end of the first four games here. Like, it's, they played, it wasn't like they got a win that, you know, they kind of scraped by and it was, like, very lucky, especially with a couple guys out of the lineup in Barkov and Tkachuk, but, like, they played a pretty solid game. They got back to being way more assertive on the D side and the offensive side, and like, that to me is the biggest kind of trademark of the team last year, was like, they came in waves and it was kind of relentless. And so I feel like this kind of ends the first four games now, kind of regardless of what moving forward, they can just kind of get into the season.
It's almost like a clean slate, it feels like.
100%.
Right? Yeah. It's like you're back to 500, and basically, like, no harm done. Hey, it wasn't perfect, but here we are, and we can go forward from here.
And it's almost to the point of, like, now that you have the win, the guys, I almost guarantee, like, they would have laughed after that game of, like, oh, man, like, that was so bad. Now we can kind of admit it to ourselves and, like, okay, we're kind of back. Let's get moving here. Like, we've messed around enough. Let's get the year going.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Again, I get it. I get why they say, like, it's only three games. No one's worried. But come on. You want to get your first win. Of course you do.
You don't care as soon as it goes.
Right.
But you're never going to admit it. Like, that's all those guys are thinking about. Like, and you'd finish it at the end of every sentence when you're kind of complaining in, like, yes, I know it's early.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that early can stretch pretty quickly, and not everyone's going to be able to have the comeback the Oilers did last year after an abysmal start.
No, man, that was wild.
Like, you don't want to be chasing that the entire year.
You don't want to put yourself in a position where you have to be like a 125-point team to sniff the playoffs.
Yeah, you don't want to be doing that. Like, the year is hard and long enough already. You don't need to make it harder yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's just that idea of, like, don't let it snowball, right? Don't bury yourself early where your backs are up against the wall, and now they take that deep breath, exhale, move forward. And, you know, I do think it was telling that, one, it was JT Miller scoring the overtime winner, and already a couple of clutch moments for him early in the year. But Quinn Hughes, right, was, for my money, easily the best player on the ice last night. And it just feels like that's what the best players in the league are able to do, right? When they know, hey, we need a win. Yeah, it's only game four, but we need a win tonight. They're capable of just elevating to that extra level where, you know, he looked like MVP type of performance from Quinn Hughes last night.
And, like, I'll start with this saying, like, you know, I've been the fourth line bubble guy.
Yep.
And, like, you know you can help your team and you have your job for me. He was on the PK.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, you might chip in once in a while, but when things aren't going right, whether you want to or not, like, you're looking to your best players like, man, you got to figure this out mm-hmm. because there's only so much I can do. Like, you guys are our engine. And, you know, I thought Quinn last night was... not saying that he looked tired or slow in the first games, but I felt like, you know, those quick little jukes at the top,
mm-hmm.
like it looked more confident and he looked quicker out of them.
The first three games, I thought like he bobbled the puck more than we see from Quinn Hughes in a regular. Like we're, and it was so jarring because you're like, oh, Quinn Hughes, he's perfect with the puck. And then it's slipping off his stick. And you're like, what the heck? What's going on?
You could
on
almost
here?
See him thinking way yep. too much where things aren't going right. He's a player that is so beyond special with the puck that you're now trying to find plays where, you know, you saw it last night and you saw it a lot last year where he wasn't finding plays, like he moved his feet and they kind of found him and then he's good enough to make the play.
That's a good way of thinking about it, right? He's not waiting for the opportunity, he's making the opportunity.
Yeah,
he's
like,
creating the chance.
Like you watch 70% of the guys in the league, like
yep.
you can kind of see where the next play is going. Like
right.
you read it in their eyes or their body positioning, like you know what's happening. But with Quinn, like, he's so good at receiving the puck and already have his feet moving one direction, but he knows he's already going the other
yeah.
way. Like, his hands are in position to make that quick cut. And it was, you know, for lack of better words, like, it was fun to watch again last night. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah, man, when he's on his game, it's a treat. It's ridiculous.
It's
how
unbelievable.
He can do out there.
Like,
and as you said, you know, from your experience being farther down the lineup, right? And you kind of know, you know who the guys who are really going to carry the water are, and you're waiting for them or expecting them to step up. When they do, and you could see it early from Quinn Hughes last night, like, what is that? What's your reaction on the bench when you're seeing him do that stuff on the ice? You're like, oh, okay, he has it tonight. This is the Quinn Hughes we've been wanting to see. What does that do for the other guys on the bench?
Fall in line.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you have your leaders for a reason. That doesn't mean that you don't have a guy like Garland that jumps in and is your best player one night. Or, you know, even last night, like, Teddy Bluger has a
was
great
awesome.
Game.
Yeah.
Like, he played some big, important minutes and got his goal. Like, things were good. But if you're going to win and you're going to be a consistent team, like, your big guys need to be the big guys where everyone else follows their example. Right? Like, when, especially, like, late, like, Quinn takes that big hit. He's gone and he's out there for the first shift. Like, as a guy that knows he's not going on the ice in overtime, you're like, you're sitting there looking at it and you're like, yep, we got it. Like, he's back. Like, he's not going to let this not happen here.
This is totally an aside, but what did you think of Paul Maurice all forwards, 3-on-3?
I mean, I absolutely love it. Do I think it's a good game plan? I mean, maybe teach them how to gap up a little first
yes,
beforehand.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Miller's an absolute speed demon, but if you let him have two zones
yeah.
to get really wound up, like, he's going to get moving, and then he's a big boy. You're not stopping him then.
And I guess the idea is, like, they don't have... I mean, they lost Brandon Montour, right? So they don't have a Quinn Hughes out there who's, like, a wizard on the blue line with the puck. You know, Ekblad's a great player, but that's not how you think about him. Forsling, same thing. So I do kind of understand it, but yeah, as you said, like, it's... I guess maybe it's just Paul Maurice early season trying some things out. He's like, ah, we'll see how this works.
I mean, and he makes really, like, he goes gut calls a
yep.
decent amount. And, I mean, he just won a cup. He's a pretty decent coach, so I'm not going to tell
him
how to coach. But at the same time, like, that is a early in the year fun little
yep.
experiment.
Yeah, get more forwards involved, too.
Get
right?
more going.
So,
like,
yep.
they were very shorthanded. Guys were playing big minutes, and he kind of rolled with what he thought was going to give him a chance.
So... You know, I really love the way you phrased it there with Quinn Hughes, not waiting for the play, not seeing where the play is going, but, you know, taking control, being decisive, making those plays. That's what the best players are capable of doing. And oftentimes they're really unexpected plays, right? As you said, they're not telegraphing what they're going to do. They're things that, you know, only they can really pull off or see. And I think that's such a great way of thinking and comparing and contrasting to what we're seeing from Elias Pettersson right now, right? And look, I definitely think he had his best game of the season, low bar so far from what we've seen. I think you could absolutely say it was progress for Elias Pettersson, but, you know, we all know he has a lot of a higher ceiling than that as well. I mean, like, I've had such trouble wrapping my head around this because it's so different from what we're used to seeing. Like, what do you make of it watching him these days?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, he has, especially the last two games, like, he's had more shifts where he looks, I don't want to say he looks back, because it's definitely not to that level yet, but, like, where he was, again, I'll use the word assertive, like, he got in the forecheck, mm-hmm. and when he's playing his best game, I'm not saying he's going in there and running guys, but, like, he separates man from puck, and he can make the quick play, because he knows, like, he's taken that, you know, mental snapshot of where his guys are, and he knows where that is. Like, he had, was it two games ago, he got in on the forecheck, pretty good hit, and then he had DeBrusk out front for a good chance. Like, that's what you need to see more of. I was talking about it yesterday, I think it was, with Dan and Sad, of, like, no one's going to make your confidence for you.
Yes.
Like, you have to, you'll have your coaching staff and your skills guys and all that that are going to help you as much as they can. But at the end of the day, like, you have to create your own confidence and edge, really. And right now, I just see a little too much thinking still and a little timid. And I don't know where that's coming from over the past, I want to call it 36 games now. Yeah. But in saying that, he's starting to look a little better, and I feel like that's almost, you know, in the fall in line, we were talking in the last one there, of those two players, and Miller and Hughes showed up last night, Besser had a good game, like, everyone's starting to roll.
Yeah.
You can't get left behind. It doesn't, we can take out his new contract, all of that, it doesn't matter.
It matters to us.
It matters
to us. But
it's
not like the team is talking about that and thinking about that,
no,
right?
No, like, you just want him to win, and you know he has a lot more there to give. Like, it doesn't matter if, while he was on his entry-level deal and he's doing amazing, if he starts taking a back seat to stuff, guys aren't going to be happy, regardless if he's making 900 or 11.6. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. You have to do your job, and it's just a little bit away from him still.
Yeah, I said earlier in the show, like, last night felt like maybe like his B or C game. And if it was January and he's having a normal Elias Pettersson season and being really productive, and he plays that game in a random game, no one's coming on the radio, oh, he was terrible last night, right? Like, it's just, he's not a story. You're like, oh, he was not super noticeable, but whatever. It was just a normal, slightly off game. But it's because we haven't seen his A game consistently for so long, or really at all for a long time, as you said, you know, 30 plus games, that it still feels like a disappointment. So I do think it's progress, right? Getting to just a little bit of a higher level, but the conversation is not going to stop until we see the A game for, you know, 10 games, something like that. What we know he's really capable of doing out there.
Yeah, and it's tough. You have a situation with him where you don't want, I mean, this is me personally talking, like, you don't want to keep seeing the entire fan base just down his throat, but I understand why they are. Like, there's a difference in, like, players can handle a teammate that's going through a slump that, you know, it's just the puck's not going for him. He's making mistakes all over the place, and it is what it is. You know, he's going to bounce back, but you can see the effort. And not saying his effort's not there sometimes, but, like, the extra little bit, like, he needs to just focus on the next puck battle, like, just keep winning his next thing, and you'll start kind of building that confidence that way. But just like any job in the world that you have a boss, like, you have to build capital,
right?
So when you do have a bad game, then it doesn't matter, because he knows you have a body of work that's fine.
Well, and I do think, you know, the thing that's been so weird about this is it's not even the type of slump that you see from star players sometimes where oh man, you know, whoever, Nikita Kucherov has one goal in his last 13 games. And it's like, yeah, but he's got all these shots and you can see it and you know it's going to come, right? There's sometimes where it's a slump and you know, hey, he's still doing all the right things. It's just bad luck. You know he's going to bounce back. This hasn't felt like that, obviously. But I do think you look at last night, you know, he has the one off the crossover. I thought he made a bunch of nice setups of scoring chances. Like last night, I think at least you could say, It's not where his game needs to be. It's not at his best. But if he keeps having games like that, at least some point production will come, right? Like he was involved enough, not to say that it's good enough, but that was the first time where I've really felt like, okay, at least if you're doing that, you'll start contributing. There will be a bottom line and goals that will come.
Yeah, like he took some steps last night, but I would, to a lesser extent, you know, like Quinn Hughes did not have a great start to the year. And he's a guy that's obviously very proud and he's the captain of the team. Like his biggest issue that was being talked about was all his blocked shots. He figured it out last night. What did he end up with? Nine last night?
Yeah.
That's a lot of shots.
Yeah. You're so, right. There was no gradual for Quinn Hughes. It was just like, no, I'm going to have a great game.
Yeah,
right
he's
now.
Like, this is not good enough. I need to figure it out. You know, he watched video, he looked at some stuff and he figured it out. That's what we need to see from Pettersson now in the sense of, you have a body of work in the last, you know, we'll say four games. We can take out last year.
Sure.
Whatever. There's four games there that you haven't, until last night where he did take some steps, like he hasn't learned from, I don't want to say mistakes, but just from mediocrity, where another player in the middle six can do that to start the year and it's not going to affect you nearly as much.
Yeah.
When you have your top paid player that needs to take steps, like you want to see that he's putting in that work. We're not in the dressing room to see what he's doing, and I'm sure that he is, but like there needs to be substantial, terrible language, buying in.
Sure.
I couldn't make that sentence
work. They got to dig in.
Dig in.
That's the new catchphrase in the NHL.
It's unbelievable. Like,
was that one you heard or is that a new one?
Oh, no. Dig in is, well, the other day they had it like popping into the show about six times. Anytime someone said it, it was unbelievable.
Yes. It's the new thing around the NHL. You got to dig in. Thank you to Connor McDavid for that one. But, you know, even your, I think that's a great comparison, right? Like the way Quinn Hughes was able to just go from 0 to 60. Not that he was a zero, but you know what I mean? Like just the immediate elevation to elite level. And I would compare, again, Elias Pettersson to one of the other elite players on the team, JT Miller. And, you know, I think JT Miller has had a flawed start to the season. There's been a lot of giveaways, but big moments. He's earned the team points, right? Tied the game against Calgary, won the game last night. So even if you don't think shift by shift, you know, for this whole 60 minutes, he's at the level he was at last year. He's finding those big moments to come through and help his team.
And I would say that was more mentally not being ready because he didn't play really any preseason and was barely kind of like he was on the ice, but like it's just different,
sure,
right? Like, so that took a bit, but you could see his effort. You could see whether he got to the puck or not, like he was giving everything he could to get there, or when he made his mistake, like he was trying to fix it. So like I wasn't as, not saying worried, but wasn't as concerned with Miller because, I mean, like, he's just a emotional beast in this league. Like, you knew he wasn't going to settle for what his level was. Like, he's going to get to where he was last night as his line started to take over the game in the third a bit.
That finish, too, man. I know, like, we've seen JT Miller score so many goals, but it's like, man, that's a good shot.
But, like, is there another guy on the team that can do that?
No.
Besser, maybe?
I don't know... Like, Besser, if he gets into a position like that, obviously has the shooting capability, but to create his opportunity that, you know, I don't know if he really has that.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that for sure. Like, I don't think there's anyone that can rifle it as hard as he can off a quick release like that.
Like, after, you know, skating in with speed and against a forward, but still.
Hey, he's still back there. He's still wearing a jersey.
That's exactly right. Okay, so I don't want to spend the whole time on Pettersson, but just, you know, I do find it really interesting thinking about... And as you said, look, we're not in the room, so we don't know how he's working, how hard he's doing, and all of that. But from a teammate's perspective, on the ice, you know, off the ice, but I think especially I'm interested in on the ice. I mean, when you know a star is struggling like that, how do you approach it, right? Like, okay, like Garland and Hoglander, you're playing with Elias Pettersson right now, and typically for his Canucks tenure, that's been a huge reward for players, right? It's like, hey, you got to go play with Elias Pettersson. Now it's almost a case of, hey, Garland and Hoglander, you're playing really well. Go try to get something out of this guy. I mean, it's just, I'm curious how teammates view it. Does it change how you play with the player? What impact does it have on how you approach a star player on your team when they're going through a slump?
I think it totally depends on, one, what that person's personality is and how they are in the room and interact with the group, and to what degree are we at. So for the first part of it, one positive thing I would say for sure is generally when you see even the best players and it's an extended period of time that things are not going good and it's not just puck luck at this point, like you'll see more fire from the teammates barking back if there's a discussion, because they now don't feel like you're above them in the hierarchy, really. And I haven't seen any of that here. So it still feels like the whole group believes in him.
Yep.
And not that he's, you know, everyone's going to just chuck it away here. Like, it's not to that point by any means, but like, it looks like they all still fully have his back and know, like, not only do we believe in him that he'll get himself out of this, but like, our team needs him to do this. So let's keep supporting. It doesn't seem like there's extra bickering or anything like that on the bench. And, you know, then you get put with those two guys, and instead of how it, you know, how it should be on paper of Pettersson's the one dragging along his line mates, you now have Garland, who's had a great start to the year, that with whatever happens on the ice, that guy is somehow going to come out with the puck.
It's unreal.
It's unbelievable.
He had a play against Tampa where he's going in for a battle with Victor Hedman, who's like, what, 6'4", probably has like 8 inches at least on Garland, and is like one of the best defensemen of his generation. And Garland just kind of angles his body into him in the corner, and boop, has the puck. He's going the other way. It's Victor Hedman.
It's unbelievable. I don't know if you remember the one though. And it's like, it was a nothing play, but it was more, I was sitting there watching it in the Philly game, where he goes to dump it in right at the blue line, a little flick. It kind of deflects off someone. No one knows where it is. And all of a sudden, his stick's like 4 feet away from spacking it back to his feet out of the air. Like, it just is glued to him right now. And then, so you need to use that to kind of springboard it. And again, like, there was some points last night that really looked more vintage Petey.
For sure.
That just, with the puck in the zone, like, where you could see that he wasn't like, maybe I'll go around this guy. It was a decision.
I'm going to go
around
this guy.
Yes, I'm either doing it or I'm not.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not half-hearting doing it.
Or I'm here evaluating my options. Should I shoot or should I pass? Like, there were still some moments, but there were also ones where it was, okay, I'm going to make this dangerous pass right now, right? Which is like, that was his superpowers, processing, knowing what the best decision was to make before he had to make it.
And that's a guy that is capable of that. Like, there's reasons why, you know, we talk about some of the players in the league that, you know, they have the best shot. That's why they shoot all the time. Like, yes, they have a very good shot, but just a lot of the guys don't process the game quick enough to where they see a guy driving while they're already halfway coming down on the one-timer. Like, I wasn't able to do that. Like, I was hitting the one-timer basically with my eyes closed as hard as I could. And then you have a guy like Pettersson where he's going and like he's able to see that while working his shot motion, right? And like that's what makes him so special in a lot of ways. And that's something that Quinn does. And that's why they're so dangerous on a power play when it was rolling at points.
It's Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Landon Ferraro in studio for the final hour of the show. Lots more to get into from last night in the first few games of the Canucks season. We got some questions in the inbox for you as well that we can hit. This comment comes in from Blake, the sometimes welder. I think Drance has to look in his rearview mirror. Landon is crisp and blanking awesome. Awesome hockey guy to listen to. So there you go. You're coming for Drance's job after one segment here. As I said, 650, get your thoughts in, questions you have for Landon or for the final segment of the show. I want to talk a little power play, a little bit some of the offensive things they're trying to do off the rush as well, and lots more. Final segment next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here, Landon Ferraro in studio with me for the final hour of the show today. Final segment of the week here on a very, very rainy Friday. I hope everyone's staying dry out there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for making us a part of your day. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. All right, so I teased that we would talk about the power play. Now, I know that's a bummer, but so before we do that, we get into that here. This question came in from Tim, who says, hey, fellas, kind of off topic, but hearing Landon speak about his father Ray's induction got me thinking what his favorite memory might be of his dad's playing career. Thanks and have a great weekend. You have one that stands out when you're growing up?
I'll give you two quick ones. I was very lucky. My dad's last year in Atlanta, I was 10. I got to work in the dressing room on weekends,
like
filling up water bottles and bugging Danny Heatley nonstop. I think I asked him for a stick every game. But honestly, like it's not my best memory, but it's definitely the one that sticks with me the most was being at the game at Joe Louis Arena in 2002 when they lost to Detroit, his last game.
Mm-hmm.
Not really realizing how cool of a moment it would be years later that I played my first game at the Joe. So it was kind of, you know, his end and my start were in the same rank. Was really cool.
That is very cool. Was Ilya Kovalchuk on that Thrashers team?
He was. Yeah, so. Kovy didn't really speak English at that point, so as a 10-year-old, I avoided. But he flashed a smile. That was nice.
Yeah.
But there was not much conversation.
The intimidating Russian.
Yeah. I just went and just bugged Heatley nonstop instead.
Man, that's fantastic. All right. So let's get into it because it is, hey, they got the win last night, but also I think a lot of frustration early in the season with the Canucks power play. And this is not a new thing. You know, this is something that goes back to the playoffs, to the second half of last season. And it's another weird one, right? Because you look at the guys they're running out there, starting with Quinn Hughes and JT Miller. Okay, we know Pettersson's situation, but still a very talented player. Brock Besser's done great work on the power play in the past. It just feels like it should, even if it's not the best in the league or the, you know, top three in the league or anything like that, it feels like it shouldn't look so hard. Like, right? They make it look labored and hard when they're out there, which is so weird for that caliber of players. Like, what's your takeaway right now when you watch the Canucks on the man advantage?
Slow.
Yeah.
It would be the word right now for me. Like, just going back through my notes from last night's game, and like every power play, it's basically me saying still needs more speed on the break-ins. You know, they love the long drop, which is great, but you need your kick out guys, like the two on the outside, you need them as that puck's getting thrown back. Like, you need them to almost circle back over their red line to the defensive side of the red line and gain that speed so that whoever it is that's carrying it up, because they do kind of rotate whoever's back there, actually has a kick out. Like, there was one last night later where Besser's skating up with it. He throws it out to the right side, but he's stopped up out there. Now he has to try and go get it himself with no support. You're not going to win that battle. And that's what I felt like a lot of the power play was trying to get in with no pace. And then once you do get it into the zone, like no one has speed to go attack. So it's a lot of like one-on-twos while you have the man advantage. Like, that's just not a winning recipe. And when you have, especially, like, this is where I feel like Pettersson could really buy some of his confidence, is try and make him the guy back as much as possible because he's fast, right? Like, if it's not going to be Quinn taking off, he's the next best option. So let him get up there and start going with speed and taking guys on one-on-one. Like, skilled players love, especially when you catch, it's a forward on the outside.
Right.
Like, that is gold to them, right? So, like, let him have as many of those, like, face-up one-on-ones where he can make a move to the left, rip out to the side, to the right. Now he's already going through. You finish your route to the far end down below, and if it's Besser on the right wing, now he actually has a rim out down below. He can skate it down, kick it back up. Like, you need an out as soon as possible for below you, above you, and the bumper in the middle. Like, you have to have three options. And right now, a lot of times, there's one. And it's back up the boards, but you've only really gathered 10 feet.
Yeah, and as you said, it's not like a new... They don't seem to be able to put themselves in positions where they're using the numerical advantage, right? Because if it's back up the boards often, it's like it's a two-on-two situation, right? There's one guy guarding the puck, and there's one guy taking the guy, you know, the option. So you have the man advantage, but it's all of a sudden you're in a two-on-two, right? And it's like, well, you're not making the most of it.
And the whole point of a power play, or a way of attacking a power play, is trying to make two-on-ones all over the ice and making the PK very uncomfortable. When you have, on a break-in, you have three players stopped on the blue line with one carrying the puck up, but you know he's throwing it back. As a PK guy, like, it's pretty easy. And not only that, like, you're comfortable. Because as long as I hold up the blue line, I don't care if you rim it in, I'm going to get a little piece of you, so you can't get in as fast as you can. And our other D's kind of playing center field already. Like, he's just going to grab it and throw it back out. Like, there's no uncomfortableness of it. God, I don't like that word either. How about that one? But no, you need to make people uncomfortable on the ice. And as a PK guy, anytime that you can reset in the middle, once it's in the zone now, anytime that you can reset yourself and kind of take a stop, look around, make sure you know where everyone is, like the sigh of relief that you have. Right. But when the power play is going and Quinn is explosive up top, he's using both sides of the flanks, all of a sudden you're now having to, instead of shoulder checking every 5 seconds, like your head feels like it's just snapping off because you're constantly checking over your shoulder. Where's my bumper guy? Where's the far side? Like, there's a lot to think about.
And it's funny with the power play, because so often, and look, it's been a big topic of conversation. It's fun to talk about when it's going well, but it's fun to analyze. And so often what we do, right, is we talk about when they get set up in the zone, right? Okay, who should be on the bumper? Should Miller and Pettersson switch flanks, right? And, you know, we know that Tocchet wants them to be more fluid and move around a lot more, but that's where so much of the analysis goes. But the thing that's, we can talk about the end zone side of things too, but the thing that's really holding them back is the entries, more than anything else, right? And that gets so much less attention. And it's one of those things where, you know, no one's asking them to reinvent the wheel, right? And I'm sure, you know, they're the coaching staff and Yogi, who's running the power play, he sees the problems. And I always find it fascinating that, again, we're talking about really skilled, dynamic, creative, smart players that are playing slow, that are playing uncreative. I always find that disconnect of they know what they need to do. I'm sure they do. I'm sure the coaches are telling them. But for whatever reason, it's almost like they're stuck in a rut when they get out there. And it's like, no, they don't know how to break out of the pattern they've fallen into.
And it's hard when you have a lot of skill on a top power play and it has had success at parts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see, as a player, you see it for everything that it can be if it goes right.
Mm-hmm.
And the coaching staff, and I'd say the media and the fans, see everything that it's not. So to them, I'm saying I would feel that they think they're a click or two away from it just really working. And the part that is a bit confusing to me going back all the way to last year is that they haven't tried different breakouts.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't need to be a switch to all every time now, but how about the first time up, we do five back. Everyone comes with a ton of speed. We know we're going to dump it in and we're going to go make them really have to work to get this out. And if they're going to get it out quick, three of them are going to get hit in the process. So it comes back down. Maybe you go to, you know, I call it the Christmas tree. They go to the 4 points on all four blue lines. Like, start throwing different looks at them. Like, they're very good at set plays through games, right? Like, they love that far end wall. They've connected a few times. I know this one was at 5-on-5, but it was a face-off on the left side. They win it back to Hughes, over to Hronek. He throws it down to Miller, who took the draw. He'd already swung out, and Hughes swings all the way back up over and gets a really good chance out of it. Like, they're very good at set plays. So if you're seeing that, give them set plays for breakouts. Like, give them a couple different options that those players can read and make that decision on the bench. Like, hey, the first one we're doing this, the next we're going to do that if it comes back down again. And the next time you might try two different things, or you might do the one that worked. But just being adaptable is probably the best way to say it.
Well, and at least, you know, as you said, with your experience as a penalty killer, like, give the penalty killers on the other team something else to think about. Give them something else to try to prepare for when they're watching, when they're doing the pre-scout, and, okay, this is how they like to break out, right? Like, don't let them key in on just the one thing. Have other options, at least, that you can cycle through. And, I mean, at this point, right, like, you're in a funk. Try something new. You can always go back to the old way.
The only thing that's going to happen is you're not going to score there, yeah, too. So, like, you might as well give it a try. Yeah. But, no, like, it's something for the PK as well that you have to worry about while you're on the power play is, just like a power play when it's going really well, like, you step on the ice and you're like, this is going in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're getting a very good look where it's going in. It's no different on the PK side. Like, you're making those strong stands up on the blue line. Every time that you smack it back down the ice, your ego grows a little bit more. You're like, these guys are never going to get in.
Yeah.
Like, I have it. We, like, our unit has got this. So, not only are you pulling momentum away from yourself, you're building up the other team as well.
This is a good question that comes in from Puff, who says, would it be fair to say that because they've done the same thing for so long, changing it is very difficult? I mean, he says, really, he's seen the same PP since the Green era, so could it just be them being stuck in their ways? That's what I was getting at. It feels like they're just stuck in a rut, right?
Yeah, I mean, very possible.
Yeah.
And that's their comfort zone of, this is what we like to do. But I would argue that with, you're playing in the best league in the world against the best players in the world trying to make you not score. Like, there's guys in this league that have literally held on for 15 years making sure those guys don't score on the
because
power
they're penalty killers.
Right? Yep. Like, it's as good as you are with the puck, they're as good without it. Right? So, if it's not working, you got to change
it. You got to do something, yeah.
Like, at least look for options.
And I think it's, you can almost see the, I mean, obviously it's all connected, right? The breakouts and what they're doing the in zone. But I think because it's so labored and such a struggle to get into the zone, to get set up on the power play, I almost start to see some impatience and some frustration as soon as they're set up, right? I mean, like, last night, there's a couple of moments where, you know, maybe they're decent shots, but they're not exactly grade A's, and they're taking them right away. And I get there's always a balance to be struck, right? You don't want to be stuck passing it around looking for the perfect, you know, backdoor tap in play, right? You got to be willing to shoot when you're in good situations, but you can't just fire away as soon as you get set up, right? Like, you work so hard to get set up, at least try to generate a quality look off it. And I feel like there's almost just this sense of, oh man, we finally got set up, we just got to get a shot off here.
And the hard part there is, sometimes, like, that is, there's a lot of coaches that say off of a break-in and you get your structure, or off a face-off, like, I want a shot within 5 seconds. Like, you need to get the PK on their heels. Because if I'm shooting the puck from the right flank, for the most part, I know where I'm putting it, and it's going there.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't go in, I know where that rebound's going to go just from years of it being your life. The PK can't see that,
yeah,
right? Like, they're watching you. They can't see the goalie behind them. So, like, that's where a quick shot is good. You can get a bit of movement, break up the PK's structure, and then you also have them on their heels as you go get the puck again. But none of that works if you don't have a net front presence already there. And then on top of it, you're playing technically a structure with a bumper. Like, you need to have two guys that have the low rebound and the high rebound. And, you know, as a guy that played the bumper, you know, in the American League and over in Germany, I always I knew I was a righty. My net front at the time was a lefty. So I knew any shot that comes in, and he knew, he's taking the left side of the net, I take the right side. Like, we're both on our forehands and we can make it work. Right now, they're trying to get to their positions, but not really getting there. Like, it's just stuck. Like, they're thinking instead of just playing. And you saw a couple times last night where it was, I think it was in the second period, the first break-in attempt was they're skating backwards. And then the next one comes, and they drop it back to Miller, and he comes with some pace and some conviction, and they got in. Like, there's streaks of it where they get, you can almost see them like they get mad, and that extra effort is there again. Like, just because you're up a player doesn't mean that you get to try less hard. If anything, you try harder because you're trying to make plays to score. The other team, all they have to do, if you think about it, is get in front and smack it away. It's not like you're trying to make plays.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right? Like, it's simple hockey at that point.
Well, and as much as it's, you know, it's a reward and it can be fun on the power play, it's also so, it's so crucial, right? Like, I think about the one after the challenge, right? Where, first of all, bizarre challenge. Have you ever seen that before?
No.
I was like, what is not happening
at all. And honestly, that's the one I'm talking about, was the right one after that break.
And if you think about what a moment that could be, you scored, they challenged, and now you're on the power play. Like, that's a go for the throat type of moment, right? That's a let's put this game away. The effort level, it's not, hey, we got a power play, that's great. The effort level should be maximum at that point, even if you're a skilled player.
You're smelling blood at that point, especially with how they've started. Like, they had a good game yesterday. Like, they were in charge of it for the most part, I would say. And when they had points where they were getting hemmed, it wasn't like the first three games where they were getting hemmed and giving up insane chances just from people not really being clued in into the D-zone structure. Last night was more so, everything was kept to the outside. They finished quicker in the D zone. And when stuff did break down, they had a goalie that was standing tall behind them and making very good but simple saves. Like, they didn't look like they were hard for him. Like, he's in position, he's confident. Like, it gave them some stability.
This text comes in 650-650. Final few minutes of the show here with Landon Ferraro in studio. Special guest co-host here with Drance traveling today. This one comes in. Ask Landon what he thinks about all the line juggling during the game. It seems like leaving guys to create some chemistry might have some value. And again, like, talk it. He's trying to find the right combinations, right? So he's cycling through things. He's tweaking things. He's looking for what he can really rely on. The one that stands out to me is, okay, you put Pettersson with Garland and Hoglander. I liked that. I thought they had some good moments. Baines still with Miller and Besser to start the game. After, in the Tampa game, you know, late in the game, you put DeBrusk up there with them. Late in the game last night, what happens? You put DeBrusk up with Miller and Besser. You didn't sign Jake DeBrusk to be playing with Teddy Bluger and Kiefer Sherwood, right? That's not why you gave him the commitment. You signed him to play with Elias Pettersson. You've already gone away from that, but he's clearly one of your six best forwards. I think at a certain point, you just got to say, these are our six guys, right? We're going to play them in the top six in some combination, and we're going to give them a chance to gel a little bit out there.
I think, too, it's important, and obviously you have chemistry, and if you can find your groups, perfect. But I also think it's a part of the game that has changed as well, in the sense of coaches aren't as stuck in their ways, in the sense of, this is my lineup, you guys figure it out because I know it works. Like, they're a lot quicker to move a guy up a line or down a line depending on how he's playing or how the other team's playing. Like, there's a lot more that goes into all these decisions now, but I do agree with you in the sense of, at the point we're at right now, it almost just feels like they signed DeBrusk to solve a problem and give Pettersson someone to play with. That hasn't quite worked yet. And now it's like they just, it's been pushed to DeBrusk where, well, now you're the one that doesn't have anyone to play with. But there is a clear option to move him up the lineup. And again, that's another player. If he did end up with Miller and Besser, like, that's another player that, it's not like any of those three have this like all world skill that it's just mind blowing watching them. I like watching them more so because they are power forwards. They play the game hard. They don't shy away from the physicality of it. Like, they're the type of line that could be like the heartbeat of your team. Like, anytime that something is going wrong, like, they're the ones that are going to literally pull you out of it just because they're not the soft little sauce play every time. They are put your shoulder down and run through someone once in a while as well.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, as soon as DeBrusk was signed, right, we all knew it was, okay, let's give Pettersson a winger, but you can also see, like, man, he'd be a nice fit. As soon as he was signed, he'd be a nice fit with Miller and Besser for all the reasons you're saying, right? Yeah. It has that similar type of game that he plays.
And I would say, seeing Pettersson with those two last night and Hoglander and Garland, like at the beginning of the year and through the summer, are those the two that you want to see him with?
Mm-hmm.
No. Like that's, and that's no knock against those two, but like you want to see your highest skill forward play with those types of players.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they showed last night that it could be a pretty good line as well. So all of a sudden, like, you're getting pretty deep, right? Now, like, what does that leave? That leaves Bluger, Sherwood, and
who, Heinen.
And Heinen.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Sherwood last night was an absolute wrecking
yes.
ball. And I have to say, he had the most dangerous stick on the ice last night. It was just, sadly, to his own face. I mean, if he could tip one of those at the other end, I'm sure he would much prefer that. But, you know, like, that's a line where now you can get some, at minimum, you're getting great energy out of.
Yeah.
But they're like, going to contribute.
I think Bluger has had a really impressive start to the season. He gets the goal. Like, he's not a guy that, you know, you can ask for some offense out of Teddy Bluger, right?
I don't know if it's just you paid way more attention last year than I did at the start.
Yep.
But, like, he looks quicker
mm-hmm.
this year. He looks more sure of himself. And that's another year in the league, another year older. So it makes sense. But, like, there looks like, I'm not saying that he looks like he could score 15 all of a sudden, but, like, he looks like he could be your part of your, you know, like, third tier
yep.
scoring that can really win you, what, 5-6 games a year, maybe?
Absolutely. And again, not just one of those guys where it's like, okay, go out there and don't screw anything up, right? But
yeah.
It's like, no, you should expect some positive plays from, and he showed that last night, obviously having a really strong game as well. Landon, this was awesome, man. Really enjoyed this. I'm hoping that Drance travels an awful lot more so we can do this more often, but that was fantastic. The listeners really enjoyed it as well, so thanks for hanging out with me for a little bit, man.
Thanks, I appreciate it. I mean, the one said we got to punt him, but I mean, there is lots of room here. We could probably
That's
just
true.
Move one more. We don't have to tell him to leave.
We might have to make this a regular thing, man. You come in studio and hang out with us for a little bit. I would love that. Thank you to Landon. Thanks to everyone for listening. Have a great weekend. Again, stay dry out there, and we'll catch you on Monday here on Sportsnet 650.